The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Shaka Hislop here in the studio, and we are starting with the Premier League relegation battle really heating up on Thursday evening, with Everton securing their safety with a brilliant comeback win against Crystal Palace. They were 2-0 down, but they clawed their way back to rapturous celebrations at Goodison Park. Two pitch invasions, no less, after Michael Keane, Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin all got the goals to secure another season in the top flight for the Toppies. So that's it. They cannot be caught now, and it will go down to the final day between Burnley and Leeds United. All Burnley have to do is match or better Leeds' result, and they'll be staying up too. But now let's welcome in Mario Melchiot, Don Hutchison and Frank Leboeuf as well. Don, I've got to start with you. What wonderful scenes we saw today, and what a way to do it for Everton.
Okay, I was calling the game tonight. I was on comms, and I thought at half-time Everton were dead and buried. 2-0 down. Palace were flowing. They were playing some fantastic football. I thought they knocked it around the first half with so much calm, and they were quite smooth in their passing. And then Frank delivered a team talk half-time. He was brave. He took Andre Gomez off and put Dele Alli on, and Dele Alli had a real impact on the game. Michael Keane struggled defensively, but he came up with a big goal in front of the Gladys Street end. And then two more big goals right in front of the Gladys Street end had the place absolutely rocking. Calvert-Lewin's winner with 5 minutes to go. Just the scenes were absolutely wild. And then they had five more minutes to try and regroup to the 90. And then the fourth official, he held up 7 minutes of injury time. So it was just a case of hanging on. And then the scenes at the end where I thought Everton were running out of lives. They lost midweek against Brentford. Two men sent off. It was emotional. The same tonight, Jordan Pickford and his backline were emotional tonight. But somehow, I don't know how they did it, 2-0 down. And they came back and win 3-2. And now they are guaranteed Premier League football next season. Amazing scenes.
And we've seen this in the final stretch from them as well, Shaka. Just this drive within them. And even with the backs against the walls tonight, they did it again.
They did. And listen, Everton have a way of throwing caution to the wind. And somehow it manages to serve them well. The first half was all about Crystal Palace. And Everton did have their opportunities. Richarlison clipped the top of a crossbar. Good save by the goalkeeper. Ayew could quite easily have been sent off. That was one for interpretation. That was, by definition, an orange card. Could have gone either way. And then he pops up and scores. And then once he does, Everton heads drop. And it was no surprise that the second goal came before half time. And then the thing about Everton is the game just opened up in the second half in a way that served Everton well. And Crystal Palace and Patrick Vieira couldn't really adjust too. And I found that odd from a very good Crystal Palace side. But it served Everton wonderfully well. Jordan Pickford making saves up at the other end, very open throughout. And then once Michael Keane got that goal to make it 2-1, the emotion within Goodison just turned up. And from there, you felt this was all about Everton. Don't get me wrong, Palace had their chances, but Everton certainly rode that emotional wave to the 3 points.
Just from personal experience, Mario, what do you think the mood would have been like in that Everton dressing room at half-time when they're down and they know they have to get a win or pick up the points?
No, at that moment when you sit in a dressing room, you're waiting for someone to pick it up, right? You look at your most experienced players, but then you need one player. You just need one player, and that's what normally happens in a dressing room, that has the guts to just say, like, hey, guys, we're going to go out there. No matter what happens, we're just going to do it. I never forget our game. I give an example when we could never beat Arsenal. We were always getting beat when I was, for example, at Chelsea. So at that moment, we came in the dressing room, we looked at each other and we said, we are down again. Are we going to win and lose 2-0 again? And then we start talking. We said, hey, no matter what, we're going to go out there and we win the game. I think it was 3-2. But just as a team, sometimes you got to go beyond the normality, and the normality comes down to, you already know if you lose this game, most likely the next one is maybe going to be cruising, you go down. So let's go all the way. And look, for me, the key guy, when Calvert-Lewin scored that goal, guys, come on. He dives in and then header. I like, you can pick anybody to score, but when he scores, being out for so long, coming back, and everybody talked about him last season, comes back this season, oh, man, it was beautiful to watch.
Just wonderful to see. Wonderful to see, Mario, as you're saying. And Frank, at this stage, when you see this, these could be players that had a side relegated, but instead it's almost like you're going from what could be zero to absolute heroes. They'll be remembered forever in the history of this club now for what happened this season.
Exactly. And that's in a way completely nonsense, because they would have been, as you say, zeros and would have some maybe trouble, you know, in down the street in Liverpool if they would have been relegated. But now they're part of the history of the club. They saved the club, the heroes, and we forget about everything, and we just take pictures and happy, and we are all happy for the players and for the club and everything. I love that. I love that, the turn of heaven that football can create, and that's why we love football. You know, you can calculate whatever you want, but while Mario and Don were talking, I thought about Aguero's goal at the last second when Manchester City became champion of England. I thought about Liverpool when they are that crazy night, three goals against Milan. You sometimes, you know, calculate, try to find the right tactic where, in fact, only one thing can make you turn all events is the craziness of football. And Everton, again, went into that craziness, and especially in the last 10 minutes and for the last goal of Calvert-Lewin, and you get that result. So you can, again, calculate everything. At the end of the day, if you have, I don't know, as Mario said, the guts of going for it, something happens. And that's absolutely crazy.
Don, how is this team going to be remembered after this game?
Well, I mean, I was part of the Everton side in 97 when we stayed up on the last day of the season, and a lot of the players are adored. That's how Everton fans treat their players. They want to see hard graft. I mean, the emotion for the Evertonians right now will be pure elation, and they will be so happy, and they'll be thinking, this has just been an incredible journey. But when they sit back and they sit down over the coming sort of days and weeks, they'll be thinking, how bad were we at the start of the season? How bad were we at Christmas time? 2 months ago, I had Everton absolutely dead and buried. Then I think what happens, Kay, as well, sometimes as a footballer, I don't know if the lads agree, sometimes you've got to go to the well. Sometimes you go to your lowest point. You know, you get to rock bottom, and then you find some resilience from somewhere. And then you dig yourself out of a hole. And they've not just done it tonight. They've done it against Leicester. They've done it against Man U. They beat Chelsea. They've had some astonishing results. So when the dust settles, the fans, the players, the management, they'll all be thinking, we should never, ever, ever be in this scenario again. It happened in 94, happened in 97. It's happened now in 2022. It can never, ever happen again to Everton, where you've got to rely on a couple of results just for a team like Everton and a club the size of Everton to just about survive. They've spent more money than Liverpool this season. Since Farhad Mashiri's been there, they've spent close to 600 million. They're going into a brand new stadium. This can't happen to Everton Football Club ever again. They've got to take stock. They've got to learn what's went wrong. The good people around the football club, keep them on, because they'll drive Everton on next season, I've got no doubt.
And Mario, do you think, because it was such a close call, that's why we saw the scenes that we did? I mean, the pitch invasion started after Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goal that obviously would have secured them safety. There was still time to go there. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Yeah, when I was in Wigan, I never forget. We had to play a game, you know, like a Highlander Chelsea, but now I go to Wigan the day we play, and it was again Arsenal. We losing the game, and I'll never forget, Charles Ngambia gets the ball on the outside. He comes inside. He bends the ball in. I'm telling you, I did not care whoever came on the pitch. I would hug anybody. Because, you know, the thing is, when you say to yourself, you know, look, relegation is not like anything can happen to you as a footballer. Eh? But relegation, for me, is the hardest thing to accept. And I think that's why I totally understand those fans. It's not weird for me. You know, like how people could be and they say sometimes to you, yeah, but you just going to watch a game. You can't behave yourself. No, my friend. I've been waiting for this moment. So when it happened, we celebrated so good. I went, I never forget, came to LA on holiday. Oh, my holiday was a million times better than ever. I swear to God, Kate, I'm telling you, I don't care what happened to me. I enjoyed everything. Stop taking your hand in front of your face. It was amazing.
Have you got any photographs?
Let's keep that secret away, but it was great.
Yeah, what happens in LA stays in LA. I know that's not the same, but maybe in this case for you, Mario. After this, Xhaka, what for Frank Lampard? How is he going to be viewed after the season that he's just had?
He will be judged by... I think he'll be given another opportunity over to next season, and that's when he'll be judged. But in judging him next season, you have to take into consideration exactly how close Everton were to getting relegated this time around. And Don's right. Right now, the feeling is one of elation. You feel as though you've won the Champions League because being in that relegation dogfight has that kind of pressure on you, or the exact inverse of what it is to be a Liverpool or a Manchester City, as we've seen this season. So all of a sudden now that you've secured Premier League survival for next season, that feeling just really spills out. You hear the fans within Goodison chanting Frank Lampard's name. And to use Don's phrase, once the dust settles, I think everybody will take a step back, recognise that despite the spending, Everton are still the fifth worst team in the league. And that says an awful lot about the players, about the manager. I know Frank Lampard wasn't there all season, so he can't bear all that responsibility. But as a club, they'll have to have a very good look at themselves and figure out what went wrong, put it right to make sure it doesn't happen again. How this team will be remembered, I think, will be defined by how they do next season. If this team struggles next season, I think what we witnessed today will quickly be forgotten, will be dismissed. It can even add to the pressure of a poor start next season. If this team goes on and does well next season and is comfortably top half of the table, then that Calvert-Lewin goal and the Keane goal all of a sudden takes on far more significance in terms of the history, sitting as far as the fans go in remembering the day.
Don, more positivity from you, seeing it is, though it is a special night. We've kept you up late. You've been on the call for this game. You're no doubt tired with that new baby at home. But Everton are staying up.
Exactly. And that's why you're seeing the emotion. That's why the fans spill out on the pitch. Frank Lampard immediately went from his dugout and he climbed the stairs. He was up there with Peter Reid and Graham Sharp and Joe Royle and Bill Kenwright. Tony Bellew was up there as well. And he was dancing. He was dancing in the main stand because he knows the amount of work that his backroom staff have all put in to get Everton to this point. And, you know, if Everton had went down, yes, it would have been on Rafa Benitez's watch, but it would have been on Frank Lampard's watch as well. But he deserves unbelievable credit because, as I said before, I thought they were gone. 2 months ago, I had Everton gone. They had no fighter. They had no bottle. They had nothing about them where I thought, where are the leaders? Then all of a sudden, Frank's got them together. Richarlison, I thought, in the last month and a half, has been sensational. I think Yerry Mina, when he played, has led that back line. Decore, I think, deserves a special mention tonight. I thought he was man of the match by a million miles. I thought it was incredible. So Frank Lampard, I wouldn't have thought just now, Kay, but I think in the summer, he'll be thinking, some of those players I need to ship on, I need to move on, I need to buy a better calibre player. Because Frank Lampard doesn't want to be fifth bottom anymore, and Everton shouldn't be fifth bottom anymore. These Everton Football Club should be in the next 2 or 3 years, they should be where Wolves want to be and where Wolves are, fighting for seventh, where Newcastle might be in a couple of years' time. That's where Everton Football Club should be. And happy, happy scenes and happy days tonight.
So it all goes down to the final day, but will it be Burnley or Leeds United going down? Currently, it's Leeds who occupy the spot in the relegation zone. But if Burnley cannot match or better their results, it'll be them heading down. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Meanwhile, Leicester and Chelsea played out a 1-1 draw. Chelsea already secure when it comes to Champions League spots this season. But now all the talk is of whether the Premier League will approve the Todd Bowley-led consortium's takeover of Chelsea, because there's proven to be a key stumbling block remaining, as talks do remain between Roman Abramovich and the UK government. Gab Marcotti is with us. What more can you tell us about this situation, Gab?
Well, okay, you're right. The approval from the Premier League, just a formality, I think, at this stage. But the key thing here is the government, as we know, has frozen Roman Abramovich's assets. They have to issue a special license for him to sell the club. And then there's a question of what happens to the proceeds. What happens to that £2.5 billion, round about $3 billion, that Todd Bowley's consortium is going to pay for the club? There have been so many suggestions. Abramovich's people have said somewhat contradictory things, that the UK government at first said, all right, it's all going to go in a foundation for charity. Now it's not entirely clear. There's the issue of the fact that Chelsea still owe Roman Abramovich personally well in excess of £1.6 billion. What happens to that loan? Does it get converted to equity? How does it happen? There's still a lot of scrutiny, a lot of technicalities in here. And I think a lot of people, I think, made a lot of assumptions of what Roman Abramovich was going to accept. And now they're not, maybe now they're not exactly coming to fruition. So they are working on it. The big deadline is May 31st, because that's when Chelsea's current license to operate runs out. I would assume, I think most people would assume, that if this isn't resolved by that point, the UK government will extend it so that Chelsea can continue to operate in the summer. Otherwise, Chelsea would simply become insolvent, and I don't think that's going to happen.
It's very interesting, obviously, because we're getting, Frank, ever closer to the summer transfer window opening. Does a situation like this impact a player's decision of whether they'd like to go to Chelsea?
Maybe. I think people like, and especially the players, when everything is clear and concrete, and it doesn't seem to be. Hopefully, before May 31st, everything is going to be clear, people will have the possibility of working on who's going to leave and who's going to sign for the club, and we'll have projections on the future of the club. But as long as this problem is not sorted out, it's complicated. Who's going to leave the club? Who's going to sign for the club? I think it's not the reality of today. I think the club has been in a no man's land for a couple of weeks in terms of sports, except for the FA Cup final, and we saw the result in the Premier League, where Chelsea didn't have anything to play almost. And now in the offices, let's say that everything has to be resolved very quickly to make sure that the club will be competitive next season.
Well, we're going to take on an office scenario now. We're actually going to do something we did a couple of weeks ago. We pretended we were the Manchester United boardroom. Now we're going to be the Chelsea boardroom, okay? So you're all the board members. We know that Chelsea are looking to bring in some new attacking talent. We know they have a wealth of attacking talent already, but the reports state that they will have to offload some of that current attacking talent to bring new attacking talent in. Now I'm going to go around my board members, and each of you has to give a player that you think should be shipped off or maybe go elsewhere looking for minutes that they're hoping to get. Nobody can say the same name. Mm-hmm. So if you're last, it's not as easy unless you do really have someone in mind. But I'm going to start with you, Mario, because it's the first time for you playing this. Who's on their way out if you're a board member?
Oh, Barclay. That's probably the easy one as well, because he's never playing. You know, if you're on the reserves and you don't get into the team as many minutes, and I think that's what everybody has to think about. But he's one of the key ones. I think you need to offload what is not really participating enough in the team. And I think that he is one of them. So that's why I go for him.
We'll let him off on this one. We want full attacking players here. Frank, you can go next. An attacking player that has to go.
Well, that's Mr. Mercure, that's an excuse, okay? Well, I think our American audience won't be happy. I think I will get rid of Mr. Pulisic. I think it was a question mark about the fact that he had he was more influential in with the national team than with Chelsea. And I think with the future of Chelsea, I don't see him playing a lot. So that's more an advice than a fact of me willing to see him leaving. I think if he wants to play next season, if he still want to be the Captain America, he will have to go to find another team to play. Because if Pulisic stays with Werner, Havertz, Mount, and maybe another one coming, if there is a possibility for the club to do so, I don't see Pulisic playing. And he never showed that it was absolutely crucial to have Christian in the first 11. So I think he will have to go.
What about you, Shaka?
Well, I'll be honest, I never thought I'd get here and Timo Werner still be an option. If I have to offload attacking talent, I am looking squarely at Timo Werner, one of the highest earners at the football club. Though he's enjoyed decent runs under Thomas Tuchel, I don't think has ever delivered. And the challenge when you have a player like Timo Werner who isn't producing yet is one of the, or if not the highest earner of the club, anybody coming in, that's going to be the bar. If you bring in any world-class talent, they are going to ask for Timo Werner money. And so you can't bring in five or six players and all of them be on that kind of money. So you've got to shed that, so at least you have your pay structure in some semblance of order. That for me, I thought that was the obvious and the first choice. I never thought, as the third ranking board member, he would still be available to me.
We're not ranking you, guys.
You come to me third, Kay. I assumed I was the third ranking board member.
That would mean that Gab's the fourth ranking board member, and that's definitely not true.
Well.
Who have you got, Gab?
Like Shaka, I'm surprised, given all the negativity surrounding Lukaku, that nobody's brought him up. But I'm not going to pick Lukaku because I kind of look at the numbers and I look at the business side of things, and it's going to be very, very difficult to shift Lukaku. And I think Chelsea still need a center forward, and I don't think that ship has sailed. So I'm going to pick somebody else. I'm going to pick Hakim Ziyech. Not because he's a bad player, but because I think he's still an asset. I think he's frustrated at his lack of minutes. I don't think he fits naturally in whatever scheme that Thomas Tuchel has played this year. He's had to adapt. His best position would probably be the Mason Mount position, but we already have Mason Mount in that position, or as a winger, but of course Chelsea don't play with wingers. So for me, Ziyech has been a round peg in a square hole, so to speak, or a square peg in a round hole even. So he'd be my guy to move on.
What are your thoughts on Hakim Ziyech,
Kate,
Mario?
If I may, Kate.
Go on, Frank.
I find that game pretty funny because Gab almost criticized us of not picking Lukaku, and at the end of the day doing the same for exactly the same reason for us. So we all think that Lukaku won't be able to get out. But I say, well done. Tactically, well done, Gab.
Okay.
He had to go last as well, so he had the tougher job.
He's a fourth-ranking board member.
Yeah, fourth-ranking board member.
I give him that.
All right. Mario, what are your thoughts on Ziyech?
Yeah, I totally agree with Gab. You know, like, he comes from Ajax. And Ajax, we are not built to sit on the bench. We are built to play. And then he goes to Chelsea, and he doesn't get so many minutes. So for me, it's normal that he doesn't look very happy when I look at him. He doesn't look like the Ziyech I know when he was at Ajax, because he was dictating, they were playing the game the way he wanted it. So I don't understand if he would like to have another season like this, because that will definitely not be what he liked to have. And I don't think he succeeded in the way he would love it to be, because he wanted to be a big, very, very important player for Chelsea, but he isn't at the moment.
That's a very important subject, you know, that we are putting with Ziyech, where I had the same feeling with the Nantes generation, with Carambeu, Pedros, Wedek, and so many others, Ferry, where they won the Ligue 1, and they were absolutely fantastic, exactly like the Ajax squad with Ziyech, with Van de Beek, and I forgot the name of the De Ligt. Where you have the feeling that when they are in the cocoon of their first club, they're absolutely fantastic because they know how they play, they know each other, but they don't mature. They don't mature. Yes. They have to be launched somewhere else, and therefore they completely disoriented, I would say, and it's becoming a problem. So before hiring a player like that coming from Ajax or before Nantes, you have to question mark yourself. Will he be okay in my tactic, in my way of working with my team?
Mario, you're best placed
to respond to that.
No, perfect. What Frank says is perfectly right. You know why I'm saying that? Because I think when we're in Holland, right, tactically and technically, we learn everything. But character-wise, I always say that. When I'm on TV in Holland, when I'm on TV in England, the character you learn at home from your parents. You don't learn it from a football club. And I think when you leave Ajax sometimes, Ajax doesn't give you that. They teach you how to play the game. They'll teach you how to be tactically, how to be smart, what position to play. You probably play more than one position. But when it comes to character-wise, if you don't have character, and that's why some of them struggle when they come to England, and that's why it becomes tough. We had a kid went to class, I went to Everton. Now, he was there really quickly, but in Holland, he's one of the biggest stars at Ajax. So there you go. You see, the league is good, but it's a system that we play at Ajax. And if you fit in the system, it's great, but you got to go out of that cocoon, what Frank just said.
Well, speaking of stars moving on, we're going to change clubs. We're also going to change position. Aaron Wan-Bissaka's future is in doubt. The word is that he will not feature in the plans of Erik ten Hag. So, Gab, it looks as though he might be looking for a new club.
Yeah, I think I was pretty evident, obviously, if you saw the way Ajax has played. The way, to be fair, most big clubs play, they don't really play with defensive fullbacks anymore. Those figures are very, very rare. And question is, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he's on a Manchester United wage, which I think makes him tougher to shift. I don't expect them to get, you know, the 50 million or whatever it was that they paid for him back. But I do think he does have a future in the Premier League, maybe playing maybe a team that plays a back three, or maybe, you know, a team that's set up differently, that just wants its fullbacks to be primarily defenders. I maybe I'm naive, but I think there's a player in there, just not in that role, and certainly not under Ten Hag.
It's interesting what Gab said, Mario, talking about the position and how now we see fullbacks and the likes of Cancelo and obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold, these attacking fullbacks. Do you think Wan-Bissaka has been a victim of his generation?
Yeah, 100%. I think in the time we had, of course, you know, Roberto Carlos and Cavu and Ashley Cole was one of them as well. And they were attacking footballers and they could deliver the ball. Nowadays, Trent Alexander and Cancelo took it to another level. Yeah, they almost like, if you look at Trent sometimes, I'm looking at the number 10 playing right back sometimes when he's on the ball. You know, and the number 10 back in the days was the guy, yeah, he dictates the game, he switched the ball like 40 yards right on the money. Then he crosses the ball. He, you know, Cancelo knows how to dribble by you. We don't have that. And that is the problem with Bissaka has. Because when Ten Hag comes, the thing that he is very, very focused on is what can our fullbacks do? And if you know that you have to compete against two sides that are arguably one of the best teams in England, then you need to deliver some quality players too. So I think that is the biggest question mark Bissaka had. But this is not a question that is just came up now. This question has been coming up for a long time. Playing one against him, you cannot beat him. Because defensively, he's very good. But when it comes down to him going forward and crossing the ball and delivering, you need to deliver a little bit more, especially when you're Man United.
He's the second most expensive defender in Manchester United history behind Harry Maguire, 45 million. Did they get it wrong? And if so, how did they get it so wrong?
I think when he started at Manchester United, Wan-Bissaka was a decent player. And he was one of the standout players in what was a poor team. But as things became more dysfunctional at Manchester United, I thought you saw some of his own weaknesses kind of exposed. And that's the challenge, finding finding places for a lot of these players who have looked so poor, just given what we've seen from Manchester United, unable to adjust, but as Gab put it, are on Manchester United wages. Who takes on that heftier wage for a right back? He's going to have to step down in terms of the size of the club, because a City or Liverpool there's simply no need. So he's going to have to take a step back. And who takes that challenge on putting a right back on that kind of wage and waiting to see how he settles into your system? That's a really difficult position for Wan-Bissaka to be in. I'm with Gab on this. I truly believe there's a good player in there. And you saw that early on. But as the dysfunction at Manchester United grew, he just seemed to regress. And that's not really all his own doing.
So whose fault is that then, Frank? Is it the players or the clubs?
Well, it's a wrong choice for maybe both of them. Everybody's guilty, and at the same time, nobody's. It's always you always bet on something. You know, you never know. And we were talking about Ajax player. When you see Ziyech playing for like three years in Ajax, you have no doubt that the guy is gonna show you everything that he showed for Ajax, and it's gonna be absolutely fantastic for Chelsea. But it doesn't work. And on the other hand, you have some other player that you don't expect. And they're absolutely brilliant, and you can't even explain why as well. It's the tactic, it's the squad, the way you play, the way you put the players into the game, and it don't work for Wan-Bissaka. So I would say 45 million, it's a lot, but he's not the only player that you have to regret to have signed at Manchester United. But for sure, Wan-Bissaka has to go if he wants to play and if he wants to have a future. So Manchester United will have to regret this signing, and Wan-Bissaka have to use that for his experience to become a tougher player and a better choicer for his future.
One player who definitely looks to be on his way out of Manchester United is Paul Pogba. All the rumours of a return to Juventus. Pogba is the choice, say Corriere dello Sport. Also, over in Tutto Sport, they've been talking about this too, saying Pogba, where's Juve? Also alluding to and talking about the fact that on social media lately, it's been a bit Juve heavy, shall we say, on Pogba's account. And he's been posting pictures of himself dressed in black and white as well. Would you say this is a good return for both parties here, Gab?
I think if he's fit, if he regains his fitness, if he's motivated, he had a tremendous relationship with Max Allegri before. So, yeah, why not? I think Juve could definitely use some more quality in the middle of the park. I mean, it's a rebuilding job. It's a slow burn. If you get an older, more mature Pogba in the right environment, I think Pogba alone isn't going to move the needle. But I also think he's at the stage of his career where, you know, he's a free agent. He can pick his poison. And, you know, I think his people have knocked at every door. I think there's some interest as well from Paris Saint-Germain. Real Madrid had been mooted. I think that trail's gone a little cold at this stage. And I think if you're Pogba, you know, you've made a lot of money, you've won a World Cup, you've achieved a lot. Why not go back to where you were comfortable and where you were happy and working with a manager who knows you inside out?
Frank, you just threw your hands up there when Gab was talking. Why?
Well, it's not against Gab that time. It's just about Pogba and the fact that I don't like one word in my vocabulary. It's nostalgia. When you are nostalgic, you want to do something that you already done, but you will never be the same, and you're going to regret it. He came back to Manchester United, where he started his career for different reason. He might go back to Juventus. I think it's not a very good idea. He's been absolutely successful at Juventus. He did well. You want to go back, he cannot be better. And because he's not the same age, he's almost 30, something like that. And I think if I would advise him, I would say, okay, try for something else. Try for a new challenge. And as Gav mentioned, he's a free transfer. He will have 10 clubs if he can sort out the financial aspect of it. He will have many clubs who will be very happy to have him. So why do you want to go back to Juve? No, nothing against Juve. For the social network, crazy people, you know, I like Juve.
No, but where then, Frank? Because you're saying if you were him, he should look elsewhere, because minutes are going to be very important for him. The World Cup's coming up at the end of the year. Obviously, he'll be wanting to play for France again. Where would he go that he's going to be ensuring minutes every week?
Well, you know, if you have the coach ready to talk to him, and as Deschamps does, as Allegri did before, you can have the best of Pogba. But it's up to the coach who really wants him to talk to him and say, "What it is with me. I know how to play Paul Pogba." That's the real trick. What do you do with Paul Pogba in your team? What Allegri did, he left him free. It's how it worked. What does Deschamps with him? He let him free. So you have to have the individuals around him working for him. But you know, if you let him free, he's going to do a little bit of defense, a little bit of attack, and you will have the great Paul Pogba. If you want him to be as a number six, as Kante, you're dead. You won't have Paul Pogba. If you want Paul Pogba as a number 10, he's dead as well. So he can go to Paris. I don't know. I don't think it's a very good idea because I don't know where they I don't know where they're going to go. But you have so many clubs, and I didn't think through. I'm sorry. Where I'm sure you can find a room for Paul Pogba to give you his best.
If you were Paul Pogba, Mario, where would you be thinking of going?
Yeah, no. One thing I agree with the guys. Going back to where you come from, I think sometimes it's the motivation is gone, and I think going back. I mean, we see, and we've been talking about players already, also other ones we mentioned, you know, for Lukaku or whatever. So I always look for a new target. Why I look for a new target? Because I use that energy and the situation of getting there, then you got to prove yourself again. It really has to be something really. So, okay, Frank called, if he goes to Paris, it might not be the right pick, but it might be the situation where he will feel at home again. Going back to Juve, I don't know where Juve is right now. You understand? In the sense of like, are they rebuilding? How is the planning? How are they going to set it back up? And that scale for him, I feel that Pogba must feel happy and he must feel at home. Then we see the best of Pogba. And at the moment, I have not seen it yet. At Juve he was, and now he needs to find another location where he and his family feel comfortable. And then I think it's a joy to watch when he's honest on his way of playing. And what Frank highlighted, he's not the holding player. I don't think he's the farthest forward in attacking-wise, but he's the guy that is the free spirit in the middle of the park that can pick the ball up wherever he wants, and then he can dictate and influence the game. If you don't give him that freedom, then it just becomes a player that plays next to, play next to Kante, and it's not really interesting, I think.
Mario, great to have you as always. There is more Paul Pogba chat over on our website. Mark Ogden has been on the case with Ryan O'Hanlon, evaluating Paul Pogba's Man United career, a flop or not his fault. Make sure you go and read that over on our website.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
He's back, and so too are the power rankings. Don Hutchison had to do it last week, Shaka. We were all very disappointed.
Oh, well, you won't be disappointed this week, Key. City hanging on to number 10 despite the draw with West Ham. I put Spurs in. Spurs have lost once since mid-March. All of a sudden now top four is in their own hands, so they got get a hefty nod. PSG, despite their drawing, they've run away with France. Rangers, I feel a bit sympathetic for. Nobody expected them to go as far as they did in the Europa League. Nobody expected them to go 120 minutes with Eintracht Frankfurt, who are in a three as this week's European silverware winners. Porto, running away in Portugal, have a cup final to come. Inter beat Juventus in the Coppa Italia. They're second to AC Milan. Can they hang on? Eintracht Frankfurt, I just mentioned. Real Madrid and Liverpool. And number one, just I couldn't separate Newcastle from Liverpool. Nobody else on that list had me in their stands this week. That alone is worthy of a number one spot.
So you doing Liverpool?
Giving me a ticket to your stadium beats winning the Champions League. You're in at number one, Newcastle United.
How biased is that, Don?
Very. Very.
I like it, though. I like his style. I see what
exactly.
He's went for freebies. He's went for freebies, Kate. I mean, Man City down at 10th when they can win the Premier League this weekend. That's a bit harsh on City, Shaq.
Well, they were 10 last week, and then, well, 10 2 weeks ago. I've no idea where they were last week. They were 10 two weeks ago. And then they drew at West Ham. The league should have been won, but they dropped 2 points against West Ham, and all of a sudden it's still going on to the wire. So I couldn't do a whole lot more with them.
Gab, have you got any issues with Shaka's power rankings this week?
There's two Italian clubs in there. Gab's all right.
Roma dropped out.
Yeah, Roma out.
Yeah, I said Jose, but they'll be back in, right, after Jose Mourinho wins the Europa Conference League, which he's described that final as the most important final of his life because he hasn't played it yet.
So that, see, even Gab's all right with Shaka.
Yeah, is he? See that?
Frank?
Well, I was checking, you know, Paris Saint-Germain last result. Well, it's true that they won away from home against Montpellier, but they drew at home against Troyes. 2-2, and so that's why I was wondering why Paris Saint-Germain was in the list of Xhaka. But I'm fine with that, you know. Xhaka is a master of perfection, so I trust him, and I have nothing else to nothing much to do and to complain about, you know. I wish him the best.
Don said the machine didn't work last week and the algorithm didn't kick in, so he had to put the work in. Who's a better Don? Yours last week or Shaka's this week?
Mine was so much better last week because mine was doing predictions. Mine had teams going for doubles, for trebles, for doubles, for winning titles, this, that, and the other. Shaq's gone on greed. He's gone on personal greed. He got a free ticket, so they've gone straight in at number one. I like your style, Shaq. I do like your style.
Oh, yeah. You see. Frank just described me as a master of perfection. That's a T-shirt if I've ever heard one.
I expect it on the next.
I'll be wearing my master of perfection T-shirt next week.
I at least expect a Twitter handle on one of the extra time questions to be master of perfection. There you go. Your task is set. Extra time coming up later. You can always stay up to date with it by subscribing to our YouTube page. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
But that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. The guys will be back, Don and Frank too, to answer your questions, your tweets on Extra Time. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. I was actually going to start with a little bit of information I found out today, but the first question should actually answer it for us. And if you don't, I'll grass you off. All right, Shaka, we've got Shaka Hislop here, we've got Frank Lebov, and
all
we've got
of a sudden, I'm very worried. I'm very worried now, Kay.
For Shaka, how was your experience at the Newcastle versus Arsenal game? We're all very proud of you.
It was fantastic. It really, really was good. Everything about it. The atmosphere was even the fans were saying it was reminiscent of back in the 90s. The football was very good as well. Anyhow, doing an incredible job with that team. Everything about this week was simply fantastic.
Really. Okay, so I used to always joke with you because I'm from the northeast of England, and I said, you must enjoy the nightlife there, and you always said, not me, I never ever sampled the delights
correct.
Of the northeast
that's very
nightlife.
Correct.
This time you did, though.
Did I? No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Well, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Did you go out and have a bit of fun in Newcastle?
Not that I can recall.
No?
Not that I can recall.
Did you go and have a little tipple? Look, right, look at all this. Look at Shaka.
Very little. It's not very, nice.
I heard that you took the award out with you. Just in case somebody didn't see.
No, I did not. I'm going to stick to my story. I went straight home every evening.
All right. We'll let you off because it was... I was just joking, of course. I was just kidding. Shaka went home. He was in bed with a cup of cocoa by what? 8 p.m.? What time?
10-ish, 10, 11-ish. Because of the time difference.
Don doesn't believe you.
Jet lag, and all that.
Pinocchio there.
No.
All right. Frank, did you have. Did you...
Move on, quick.
Where did you go, Shaka?
Move on, quick.
Frank, did you ever have any pitch invasions happen like the one at Goodison? Do you have any thoughts or opinions about them happening? Obviously non-violent ones.
Yes, I was promoted with Strasbourg playing against Rennes. We drew the first game 0-0 and we won 4-1 the second one. And we had an invasion. And that was quite scary, I would say, because fans were so happy that they started to jump on me. And there is a video of me saying, you know, I'm happy for them, but if they want to see me playing in the League One next season, they have to let me live my life and don't kill me right now, tonight. Because they were jumping on me, that was absolutely crazy. And I had to stay to yell to a guy, say, stop now. Stop jumping on me! I want to leave, and that was crazy. That was nice, you know. After when I was in the dressing room, but that was crazy. But that was a fantastic atmosphere.
Don,
I think the best one I ever seen. I was in the Gallagher end at Newcastle, and it was Kevin Keegan's last ever game for Newcastle United. I can't remember the year. I'm a little bit tired. I had a baby. I just can't remember what time it was. Or what year it was, but it was definitely in the 80s. And when he left...
I had a baby, I'm not sure what year it was. It could be one of many, Don.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I'm not sure what decade it was.
It was definitely the 80s. And it was his last ever game. And a helicopter landed in the centre circle at St James's Park. And there was a pitch invasion around the helicopter. And Kevin Keegan got in the helicopter with his full strip, boots, socks, shin pads, shorts, black and white number 7 top. And I was in the Gallagher end. I was about 10, 11. And the helicopter flew off into the sky. And I just thought, man, that is a proper send off. Getting in a helicopter on your last ever game and getting, it was magical.
In your kit?
In your kit.
I thought Don said he had a baby.
That's what I'm saying. Take your pick. There's plenty of babies that Don's had. So it could have been
But then he says he's 10 or 11.
No, I was 10 or 11. At the time,
that's what I'm saying. When you started, I thought you said, I had a baby in the 80s. Somewhere.
I'm sitting here now after calling the game. I am tired. I've had a baby. I don't know what time it is. So I can't say it was 1986 or 87. It was in the 80s.
I was with the guy.
Don didn't have a baby in the 80s. Shaka didn't go clubbing. Go on, Frank.
Both of those are true.
I was calculating how old was Don. I said, my guy, that guy doesn't age, because if he had a baby when Kevin King had stopped his last game, you know, the guy must be very old but doesn't look old. And so that was funny. Didn't get the story as well.
All right. Yeah, I thought the same as you then. Yeah. I was thinking, all right.
I had a baby in the 80s. Maybe I did.
Moving on quickly.
Moving on.
For Shaka, since you are the most humble of the four of you tonight, who boasts the most about the following accolades? Kay hosted the Ballon d'Or ceremony twice, Frank winning the World Cup, or Don scoring from the halfway line?
So, who boasts the most?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Frank. We barely get through a show without Frank talking about the World Cup. Where does he say? Oh, before we're getting ready to come on air, Frank says, Shaka and Kay, you look very French. So I say, what do you mean? How do you mean we look French? You look perfect. We French people, we are perfect. How can you top that? I'm not sure how you top that.
I don't like your attitude, Shaka. I called you the master of perfection during the show. And now you are selling stuff to the audience.
I take it back as Kay. Kay is the most fiend.
Just because I grassed him.
Thank you.
You know what though? We're not that French because we haven't won a World Cup, Shaka.
That's very true. That's very true.
He did say that before the show. You look very French and elegant. You look perfect. All right, for Kay. Which of the following are you most likely to do in the future? One, publish a book, or two, host another Ballon d'Or ceremony? I might have a book in me. Oh, okay.
Because you sure don't have a Ballon d'Or left.
In my book, I'll tell you all the secrets about Shaka Hislop and what he was like behind the scenes.
What? Moving on.
You're becoming me. Be careful, Kay.
At least it's a French ceremony that I hosted twice, Frank.
That was twice.
I know.
All right. The World Cup. All right, for Shaka, how does Trent stop Vinny Jr. in the final?
That's a really interesting... Contrasting techniques. So, or tactics, do you have to put somebody back to worry about Vinny? Does Vinny have to worry about Trent Alexander-Arnold? How he overlaps? I think that's the most interesting kind of tactical battle to come. Just see who wins. Does Trent Alexander-Arnold pin Vinicius Jr. back, or is it the other way around? And that for me is where that game might be won or lost.
Frank, do you have a thought on this question? How does Trent stop Vinny Jr. in the final?
I think it shouldn't be a question. I think they reached the final knowing that, I'm talking about Liverpool, that Trent has a problem, you know, looking behind him and checking what's going on. And that Vinicius in a Real Madrid side, that Vinicius is a real threat to the opponent if he goes fast and try to take the players on. So you should go for it. You shouldn't stop. Well, you shouldn't say to Trent, you know, you're facing Vinicius Junior, so today you don't attack. So put him on the bench because he's going to be completely useless. So you have to work alongside Trent to make sure he's going to be covered. So he's going to be the central defender, whether it's going to be Matip or Konate, who's going to cover him and take care of him and make sure that maybe if it's Anderson playing on the right side in the middle of the park, who's going to help also Trent out. So that's the only way you can cope with that defensive situation. But if you say, Trent, go for it, push Vinicius to defend a little bit, therefore he's going to be too far away from our goal, that can be also a tool. It's a chess game, and you play a final. Who's going to go for it, and who's going to back up a little bit? I don't know. But that's going to be, as Shaka said, very, very interesting to see.
I really like the next question because we were actually talking about it on our way to the studio. This is from Nadem's Interior Decorator. Oh, okay. Is goal difference, I'll ask you, Don, is goal difference the worst thing to use as a tiebreaker? Would it be better to use head-to-head record? And then it goes further, it says, and if that's even, either should there be a one-off game neutral site playoff to decide, only for relegation or top four places? So let's just go right down to it. Do you like the head-to-head record or do you prefer goal difference?
I think I prefer goal difference. I don't like head-to-head, Kay, because you might get a scenario where, you know, we got one this weekend in Serie A. Milan have got a better head-to-head than Inter, who are chasing for the Scudetto. But you might get a scenario years down the line where, let's just say it's Man City in Liverpool. There could be a 0-0 draw, and then there could be the worst game ever, but someone wins it 1-0. They've got a better head-to-head. Where I think if you've got goal difference, it says to the likes of Liverpool, right, when you're winning 3 and 4, instead of stopping at 3 and 4, go and win 7 and 8. Man City done that to Watford a couple of seasons ago. They beat them 8. So I think it leans towards, in my humble opinion, the better sides, the bigger sides, score more goals. So you're going to see more offensive football than a head-to-head, which doesn't really mean anything.
Because on the way down, I was looking. Obviously, Burnley and Leeds can finish level on points at the end of the season this weekend. And we went to look at it, and Leeds would have the head-to-head on Burnley, but obviously don't have the goal difference. So that's what could decide it in that situation. That's what will decide it in that situation. Where do you stand on it, Shaka?
I'm a little uncertain, and I'll explain this way. And Gab talks about this a lot, where in different countries and different leagues, just culturally they do things differently. Teams generally don't randomly score. If you're beating somebody 4-0 after, you know, let's say at the half-time 4-0, you're not necessarily going to go out trying to score another 4 or 5 in the second half. It's just different those countries see it. So in those circumstances, head-to-head is better. I have always, everywhere I have played, it's positions have always been decided on goal difference. So I kind of still lean that way, that goal difference ultimately decides it. But I'll sit on the fence and saying that there's no wrong answer. It really just depends on the football culture of that specific league.
Before I do go to Frank on this, Dan and I were at Real Madrid Television in the 06-07 season when Real Madrid and Barcelona finished level on points and Real Madrid won the league because they had the better head-to-head. And it just made it really exciting, is all I'll say at the time.
Right.
And Don, it was the top two teams in the league, but it was decided by how they did against each other. So I can see the argument of why people do like a head-to-head as well. Where do you stand on it, Frank? Because you're the deciding factor tonight.
I go for the goal difference for the simple reason that you win a championship or you are relegated because of the result of 38 games. Not of the result of 2 games. So it's why I go for the goal difference, because you have to consider the whole picture and not the little frame. That's my point of view.
Can I just say, you know what I do like on the other end of the table? What do Germans do? Where you have 2 teams going straight down or whatever it is, and then there's a playoff. There's a playoff between one team in the top league. So as opposed to how England do it with playoffs, you know, between 3rd and 6th and in the championship, let's say. I like that system a lot, you know. I like that a lot more than how it is in England.
Yeah, that's happening right now.
Shaka,
between Shaka,
we
league on?
We've been promoted with Strasbourg, and I was talking about the invasion. We've been promoted finishing second behind Bordeaux, and we had to play against the third of the League Two, and as a playoff, as you have in England. And then we had to play against Rennes, who finished 18th in the league of League One. And therefore, you have the chance for the League One team finishing 18th to stay up. And as you see in Germany, and we played against them and won. So I think it's nice to have not the three teams relegated, but only two, and maybe the one team who have a chance to stay up as a League One team.
Yeah, certainly makes the final day, and the final days are the more exciting.
Who's the only team in the second tier of English football to finish second and not get promoted?
Ooh. The second tier, finish second.
So, second tier of English football, right? Premier League is the top tier. Now it's the Championship. It used to be First Division. Well, second tier of English football, finish second and not get promoted. Pub quiz time.
Wow. I'm out.
I'm out. Had they been naughty?
No. Well,
is it a trick?
That's a loaded question.
They didn't have the money? They didn't have the money to go?
No.
Is it a legit question or a trick?
It's a legit question.
Wow. Any clues?
Answers? Reading FC 1995.
There was a guess in the ear from the producer who went for Reading.
Why?
They were reducing it. They were reducing the numbers in the Premier League. Four teams got relegated in 95.
Oh.
And only two went up. Middlesbrough topped the league. Middlesbrough
obviously.
Fan. Middlesbrough topped the league. Reading finished second, and we lost in the playoff final.
Look at me not caring because it wasn't over.
Yeah. We went up.
Whatever went below.
There
us,
you
I
go.
Know.
So now, next pub quiz,
I'll tell you.
I expect a share of your winnings.
All right.
Kay is becoming French. Middlesbrough, of course, you know. I mean, yeah, she's perfect.
All right, that will do it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks so much for sending in your tweets. Be sure to join us 7 days a week to always catch us here on ESPN FC.